Actually, it turns out that Savas already gave my talk, so I think I can just take transparency to go home. But well, I'll try to. I hope it will be a bit different. So maybe, and therefore there will be something different from Savas's talk. Okay, so this work is done in collaboration with. Is there a point? This work is done in collaboration with Nimar Ghani Hamed, Savas Dimopoulos, and Nemanja Kaluper. Now, before outlining my talk, let me just discuss the idea, the main point. Okay, here is the idea that you heard many times in this conference. This idea of so-called brain universe. This is our non-compact three dimensions, and here other extra dimensions which have finite volume, and there is a brain, which is line, is represented by line in this picture, and we are supposed to be living on this brain, whereas gravity can propagate in the bulk of this extra volume. The point is that, of course, this straight and infinite brain, if brain has positive tension, corresponds to the minimum of the energy of the system. But the point is that, cosmologically at least, at least the following initial condition, following configuration is not less probable than just one straight infinite brain, okay? So the point is that we have to start at some initial conditions, okay? In the early universe, at some high temperature, before the primordial inflation. And normally you think that the initial conditions for the brain would look like something like this, crumpled in this extra dimension, very chaotic. And then, if this is the case, and then you have this stage of primordial inflation, what this inflation will do for you, it will just straighten this brain out. It will just create many, many folds of the same brain, okay? Of course, there can be other brains on top of this, but let me just concentrate on the one brain. So then the point is that the distance between these folds can be anything between millimeter and the inverse Planck scale, perhaps, but distance between tips most likely is larger than the horizon if this picture is created by the inflation, okay? So in next whatever minutes, I try to discuss the implication of this picture for the astrophysics and neutrino physics, and then for the horizon problem, because it may provide a non-inflationary solution of the horizon problem. And also for supersymmetry breaking, for the observable supersymmetry breaking. Now let me concentrate for a moment on the bifold. So, already there is something strange in this picture, right? Because, so here, idea is that we live somewhere here on this brain. Here is the solar system. And then on the same brain, but which is folded, there can be other stars somewhere, okay? Now, the observer sitting on our brain, on our side, can send the gravitational pulse, and you can test this object, this another star, as a dark matter. It will look like a dark matter, which is gravitating. And you can also measure the distance by, say, applying Newton's law. You can measure gravitational distance to this object. The problem is that gravitational distance is not the same as the light distance measured by light, because if you send the light pulse, it may take forever before it reaches the star, or light emitted from this dark star can take billions of years before it comes on the Earth, if ever. So therefore, clearly in this picture, the gravitational and the light distances are not equal. They are different, and most likely, gravitational distance can be much smaller than the light distance, okay? Of course, first question that you can ask is, what is this light distance? Clearly, it is very interesting if this light distance can be of order or smaller of the present observable horizon. Because in that case, the same object which we think is nearby dark matter is the same star that we see far away, okay? And clearly this is a very interesting possibility. However, it is also this possibility is not very safe, because presumably you will see that there are some arguments which tell you that at least in this situation, you cannot use this other side as really account for the whole dark matter in the universe, okay? Now, the main motivation, astrophysical motivation of this picture will be that we want to account for the dark matter by the matter localized on the other side of the fold. And therefore, I'll discuss possibility first when this light distance is bigger than the horizon. Okay, so this means that we have not yet seen the light coming from these objects. Yes? Yes, that most, okay, that depends how you, that depends on the construction. Now, when I'll discuss stability, okay, it will be maybe more clear. But yes, I mean, in most naive picture, when this is just a brain which has positive tension, most likely it wants to minimize the surface area and the fold is going towards us. But not only that, in... Yeah, but again, I'm saying this depends on the construction. Okay, this depends on the construction. So, as a first approximation... Yeah, you will see, because most likely, okay, in the most naive picture, if you just take normal brain, which has positive tension, and this fold will look like some kind of domain wall for us, okay? And then you can ask question, what is the gravitational effect first of this object? We don't want domain walls inside our horizon. But in more general terms, you can ask this question without referring to the tension of the brain, because after all, for a moment, assume that you can somehow solve this problem with the gravitational problem of this tilt, okay? Of this tip, okay? Fine, if you want to introduce 100 identical brains which have identical matter, that's fine. I said this is matter of initial conditions, because what I said, if you start from the chaotic initial conditions like this, right, and you have period of inflation, most likely we end up with something like that. Okay, this is sort of outcome of these initial conditions. Now, if you like to introduce hundreds of identical brains, that's fine, but then there is a factor of arbitrariness there. Because we are introducing something and you are assuming that they are identical, okay? But this is different because in the sense that it is created by cosmology. These identical objects are created during the cosmological evolution, okay? But otherwise, yeah, I agree. If you introduce thousands of identical words, it's fine. Okay, so let me first discuss possibility when this tip is far away from the horizon, okay? And we want to use this other side. We want to ask the following question. Maybe there is no other dark matter in the universe, and the whole dark matter is accounted by these identical to us particles which live on this other side. Okay? Now, normally you can ask the following question, right? If I want to introduce, as you said, I take, say, our standard model, and I introduce identical mirror standard model, okay? Mirror world. And I want to use it as a dark matter. There are three problems. Actually, two are quite difficult problems for implementing that idea, okay? Now, the first problem is the following. The moment you postulate that you have identical mirror world, okay, somewhere, then, and you want to use this matter concentrated in that world as a dark matter, you have to ask about nucleosynthesis. Because we know that during Big Bang nucleosynthesis, the temperature was dominated mostly by particles on our site, okay, in our world. Now, then it, of course, it becomes a tricky question because you want temperature of this mirror universe to be much smaller during the nucleosynthesis, although you want this energy density of this other universe to be, at the end, much bigger to account for the dark matter. And the question is how you accommodate that, okay? So the mirror universe should be much colder. But this is not such a big problem, as we will see. But there is another problem, which is, I think, the most severe one. The problem is this. You want to have identical universe, okay? And you want to account for the dark matter by these particles that live in this universe. Then the question is, their density should be huge because this is baryonic cold dark matter density. But then how you explain that these particles, they don't create clusters like normal matter creates, they don't create stars, and then they don't create globular clusters? Or you can ask more, how come the sun is not half composed by those guys, okay? Because gravitationally they are identical, right? And as far as I understand, this is the question which kills any mirror world scenario which is identical to us, if you want to account for the dark matter. Because this is the point which kills it, okay? Now, there is other point also, which is not so severe again, maybe, because at least it is solved in this folded picture, that nothing prevents you from, at least in the standard model level, nothing prevents you to have kinetic mixing between, this is not dual, this is kinetic, this is photon of the mirror world, okay? So nothing prevents you from writing, this kinetic mixing between normal photon and the mirror photon. And then, because mirror photon couples now to the other electrons, you expect that this will create some problems, because we should be observing this other world in this through this mixing, okay? Now, in the case of brains, this is automatically solved, because this mixing is forbidden by locality in the extra space, okay? So in the case of brains, this will be solved automatically, even in the brains that you said, identical ones. Now, let me go to the second problem, how you avoid the problem of having globular clusters and stars, which are composed out of this invisible dark matter, okay? Here is the point, okay? So consider the universe, which has this NF faults, and we live somewhere here. So on our side, there is a baryonic density, normal baryonic density with shines, which we see. But the total density in the matter will be our matter density plus matter density on each side, okay? So although the individual densities on individual faults can be much smaller than our observed density, the integrated matter density in the whole, extra system can account for the dark matter, because it can be much larger than our density, okay? So let me take simplification when I assume that all the densities in the other brains on the other sides are equal, okay? So then the total number density is something like NF times the number density on each one. You want this total density to be something like 30 times of our density. So you want something like, on the other hand, you want density of the individual faults, okay, matter on the individual fault, to be smaller than our density. If you, as we will see in a minute, this will account for why you don't see globular clusters composed out of these guys. So this is the idea. So you have, say, 100 faults, and individual each of them has much less matter density than we have, but integrated matter density accounts for the dark matter, okay? Why this picture we think is reasonable in the cosmological context, I'll discuss a bit later. For a moment, just I'll show how this avoids clustering, okay? Actually, here's the picture. How it's quite simple, because picture is following, okay? I'll just draw in different colors these brains. So imagine there are these different color faults. And we are in the red one, and then these are particles, say, schematically. So this is baryonic density on our world. And then you have other baryons, say, green ones and black ones on the other side, okay? So individually, each of them has very low density. Now consider some collapsing structure composed out of these guys. And you have to ask question, how long it will take this structure to form something more condensed structure, okay? Say, to form the star, okay? Now what happens? Clearly, to form the star, you need dissipation, right? This means these particles should collide, release their energy, and condense. Now, dissipation is proportional to it depends on the density, because if they don't collide with each other, they will not condense. So what matters in the dissipation is only collision with their own partners, because other guys, they just see gravitationally. And that's the key point, because it's like if you consider a limit in which you have infinite number of brains and one particle on each brain, clearly they will not dissipate, because they only will see each other gravitationally. That's it, okay? So this picture will look like this. The red ones, they will condense much more rapidly, because their density is higher. Actually, it turns out if you study in detail, the cooling time is roughly proportional, inversely proportional to the density in the given species, okay? Now, then the picture is this. We want these guys to form the halo of our galaxy. But we don't want them to form stars, to form very excessive number of stars yet. Now, galaxy formation starts at roughly at the redshift 4 in the normal matter. So you want density on the individual fault to be 4 times smaller than the normal density, okay? Then picture is this. These guys created halo of the galaxy, like normal dark matter does, but star formation is just starting, okay, in their star formation. Now, oh, yeah, sure, you can have distribution. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think they will be larger than ours. I'll explain why we think that ours is highest density, okay? At least in one cosmological scenario. Now, immediate implication of this fact, okay? There are two immediate implications which are different from the normal dark matter, okay? Then, first of all, there will be this formation of this so-called macho or macho stars, which now is natural why they don't shine. They are these macho stars which don't shine. And if they are baryonic, then it's really a big question why they don't shine. Now the point is that they shine, but then light takes a long time before it reaches us. So they shine in a different direction. But they are otherwise normal stars. Okay, so this explains this possibility of having non-shining macho stars. Another outcome, which is almost, I think it's like a prediction of this scenario, because since we are saying that to account for the dark matter, the star formation in these structures has just started. Once star formation starts, then it's a very violent process. So this means that we have to see 30 times more violent gravitational collapsing effects than in the normal case. Okay. And so there are these experiments which may look for that. So it's really very difficult to avoid this number, because once you want to explain dark matter, it immediately tells you that you should see 30 times more violent gravitational effect. So this means you have to see 30 times more intensive gravitational waves, intensity. Yes. No. Because you want to explain halo, right? So you know at what redshift these guys have to condense. Once you fix that, there is no way, then they started star formation. Star formation, once it starts, then it goes on. So it's very unnatural to assume that they keep halo, but they don't yet form stars, because then we know. Once they condense, they behave like normal matter. Okay? But then this means this predicts much more violent effects than normally you would say, because normal cold dark matter, which is non-interacting, which is only gravitationally interacting, there is no star formation there, because it's almost non-dissipative. Okay? Yes? No, what we are saying is that if you want to account for the dark matter by these guys, okay, that they form galactic halo, okay, you know at what redshift the galaxy formation starts in the baryons. Now, these guys are normal baryons. Yeah, exactly. It's a lower bound. Of course, you can have. Yeah. Of course, you can have infinite number of this. Of course, sure, absolutely. Of course. No, this is absolutely. The point is, this is the point. Clearly, otherwise you can have, as I said, infinite number of them, and each molecule or each baryon on each of these folds. That's fine. It will account, but then we will not have any collapsing structures or violent effects, right? It will be like, literally like normal cold dark matter. Yeah, sorry if I confused somebody with that. Well, I don't know now. To kill this scenario, I think any scenario is very difficult to kill, right? If you really try hard, you can cook up any scenario you want. So the question is not to kill the scenario. The question is to see how natural it looks. That's my point. Well, okay, it has this, as I said, suppose we really observe 30 times more gravitational collapse and more intensive gravitational waves. The question is how you explain that. No, of course, even if we do that, that will not prove this theory, because in cosmology it's very hard to prove theories, right? Right? Even if, you know, I don't know anything, how can you really prove cosmological history? You say, okay, this looks reasonable. So, right? Okay, so anyway, so let me discuss these initial conditions, Misha's question, why we think that the density on this fold is should be maximal where we live. Let me consider last stage of inflation, and inflation driven by the field which lives on the brain. Now, independently of this proposal, there are excellent arguments to think that whatever was the cosmological history in these theories with large extra dimensions, the last stage of inflation should be driven by the field which lives on the brain. Okay? This is totally independent from this proposal. And this is the only way to avoid problems with bulk gravitons and problems with moduli, okay, fields. So once you take that fact, then let's see how that inflation will proceed in this context, okay? So we have this scalar field which lives on the brain. Now, when you fold the brain, in the effective field theory locally, the scalar field produces identical copies, NF scalar fields, okay? Living on the different brains. So in the effective low energy theory, which is that the distance is bigger than the size of extra dimension, but smaller than the distance between tips, this looks like different fields. But they have identical potential, because they are really identical. It's the same field living on the different places on the same brain. So the potentials are identical. Now, each of these fields, let me call them I, this index. Now, each of these fields couples to the fermion, say, on its own brain. And that coupling presumably is non-gravitational. However, it can also can couple to the other stuff, but that coupling will be only gravitational. Okay, because it couples to the other brains, it should couple by the exchanging some bulk modes. Then, okay, picture you have this is the following. Suppose you ask, what is the decay rate of this guy living on one particular brain? Of course, in its own fermions, it presumably decays with a larger rate than to the individual fermion in different folds. Okay? Because presumably this coupling is gravitational, this is not, so presumably this constant is bigger. So the rate is bigger. But the point is this, because number of channels is enormous, actually the whole total rate may overcompensate. Okay? So suppose if you look at the decay of this particle to all possible brains, the energy, integrated energy released on the other brains can be much bigger than energy released on our brains. But individually, each energy will be smaller than energy on our brains. Now the question is, why is this our guy who lives on our brain who is decaying and producing this energy density in the universe? Yes? Sorry? No, phi is the brain scalar. That was precisely the point. Yes. Yeah, I is the index which numbers the brain, okay? Oh, gravitationally, how can you forbid this coupling? Yeah, G prime stands for some ratio of the waves to the Planck scale, which we don't know what it is. It's some gravitational strength coupling. Right. It's some No, what do you mean? This is perfectly local. From the point of view of four-dimensional field theory, it's perfectly local theory. Yeah, it just integrates over the states which propagate in the bulk. That's it. You create some couplings between the different states on the different brains. Like gravity. No, gravity lives in the bulk, but we couple to gravity. Four-dimensionally local. Sorry? Yeah, it will be, presumably it will be suppressed because it's gravitational strength. I think it's reasonable to assume that it's suppressed, okay? Right. But the point is that because number of channels is enormous, it can overcompensate, okay? Now, how this cosmological evolution, again, will look like for this inflationary scenario? Okay, it would look like this, okay? Again, let me give different colors to different brains. So these are each color. So each of these inflatons, they have identical potential because they are the same guy living on the different places. But then you don't expect them to have initially sitting on this potential in the same place. Why should they sit in the same place, right? So initially you start from some distribution of this inflaton along this potential. And then all of these inflatons, they roll towards the minimum. So there is some kind of race of the inflatons. Okay, now each of these guys, so the situation is like this. There are this bunch of inflatons. They roll away to the minimum. Meanwhile, the universe expands exponentially. Now, one guy relaxes to the minimum, performs some oscillations, and rehits its own brain. But because inflation is still going on, because others are not in the minimum, they will immediately redshift the released energy density. So they will erase memory about first phase transition. So the bottom line is that the most important effects will come from the guy which relaxes last to the minimum. Okay? The guy that relaxes last to the minimum, as we said, it predominantly will hit its own brain, but it can release more energy density than on our brain in the integrated brain. Okay, integrated energy density released on the other brains can be much bigger because of number of channels. But always there will be one brain which is reasonable to expect that which will be hottest. Okay? Now, because we want to use the other brains, the energy density on the other brains as a dark matter, we have this factor 30 lower bound. There is no way you can form life on the other brains because our brain is the brain where galaxy formation only started, okay? The only brain so far that was forming galaxies and stars, okay? And this is why it is reasonable that this is the brain where we live. This is not, of course, anthropic argument, because this is the bottom line is that always you will end up with one brain which has highest temperature. If you use other matter as a dark matter for this universe, you have this factor 30 bottom line, and then this is the picture, okay? No, that's not inflation. As I said, there are very strong arguments to expect that whatever happens before, you need in this theory, you need last stage of inflation to be driven by the field which is localized on the brain. And this is related with the bulk graviton problems and the cosmological moduli problem, okay? And this is that stage of inflation. Yes? Yeah, in this picture, yes. Yeah, G prime is some ratio of the expectation values to the Planck scale. Now, I don't know what it precisely is. It can be phi squared over M Planck, which can be quite big, but it's a reasonable assumption to assume that those couplings are smaller individually, but because the number of channels is large, at the end, clearly this is something that, okay, we are making assumptions here. I mean, without having theory, you cannot compute these things, right? But we just say it may be reasonable to assume this picture. Okay? Yeah. No, ratio 30 comes if you want to say that they star formation just started in those other brains, and you want to account for macho stars. No, they are not empty. That's precisely the point, right? Because they are not empty. Each of them supports very low density, 4 times lower density than our baryon density. But their integrated number is huge, because, and therefore the total energy density, which we see as a dark matter, is huge. It's much bigger than, 30 times bigger than our matter, okay? That's the point. Those are not empty. They are precisely the dark matter that we see in this scenario, of course. Okay? Now, let me go to the implications for the neutrino masses of this picture. First of all, I want to recall this, how you generate in these theories with large extra dimensions the neutrino masses, the small neutrino masses. Now, you know that in standard model we have this problem to generating neutrino mass which is small, because if you generate from Yukawa couplings, like you generate electron mass, you would need Yukawa coupling which is something like 10 to the minus 14 or 16. Now, we know that there is this celebrated seesaw mechanism which generates neutrino mass in the normal theories, normal four-dimensional theories with high Planck mass. And the observation is that you have right-handed neutrino is the only particle which is singlet under the all standard model gauge interactions. And then observation of these people was that if this guy is singlet under everything, it can be very massive. Then you can integrate it out and you get very small Majorana type mass for the neutrino, okay? Now, in this large extra dimension theory with low TV scale quantum gravity, we don't really sort of have such a sort of very straightforward candidate for very heavy particles, okay? So how we generate neutrino mass is the following. Again, we use the fact that the right-handed neutrino is the only particle which is singlet under the standard model gauge group. Because of that, it's the only particle from the standard model which can live in the bulk. No other state which carries any charge under the standard model gauge group can live in the bulk. So if we assume that the right-handed neutrino is a sterile fermion which lives in the bulk, then you automatically get suppression of its coupling, right-handed neutrino to the left-handed neutrino, which is localized on the brain. And that coupling is suppressed by the volume factor, right? Because clearly, right-handed neutrino goes everywhere. We are localized, so the probability that it hits us is very low. It's suppressed by the volume factor. Now, this volume factor naively looks independent, n is number of extra dimensions. But if you translate back in the terms of Planck scale, fundamental and observable Planck scale, you will see that this is not the case. It's always independent of number of extra dimensions. It's expressed as the ratio of the fundamental and observable Planck scales. And this ratio is precisely in the ballpark that you need. It's something like 10 to the minus 14, 10 to the minus 16, this Yukawa coupling. So this is the way to generate small neutrino mass, but Dirac type, okay? Now, this was the situation independent whether you have one fault and whether you have 10 faults. Now, there is an interesting possibility of predicting exactly the neutrino mixing in the case when you have this folded universe. And the reason is the following. This is somehow this is somehow independent of this astrophysical idea, okay? Because you can use this independently if you have these astrophysical implications. Imagine you have another fault on which we have, again, another neutrino. Actually, it's the same left-handed neutrino, but it looks like sterile neutrino because it's far away. Now, clearly, this right-handed guy couples identically, with identical coupling with both, because it cannot distinguish. For this new R, they are the same left-handed neutrino living on the brain, okay? But then this means you are predicting automatically maximal mixing of the normal neutrino to the sterile neutrino, which is exactly 45 degrees, okay? So now, if you like theories with maximal neutrino mixing, yes. Yeah, this is twofold. As I said, this goes this is independent of this exactly. You will get, but yeah, the point is that always it will be calculable. You will know what will be the mixing. The question is that if you want to use it for the atmospheric neutrino, for the just so oscillation, then you want the two folds are best.
Okay,
that is yeah. Right, yes. You measure, yes, exactly. So Kamiya Kanda can measure that.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but you have translation invariance in the four dimensions along the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's the same brain.
Okay,
this is related. No, this is related with the question. This is related with the question whether you have. Sorry, Stas, maybe I can answer. So, okay, this is related with the question. No, that's a very good question, actually. I want. Yeah, you can have. Yeah, you can have. Yeah, you can. Exactly. No, sure. Yeah, absolutely. You stretch it out. Now imagine you have two folded sides, no? By folding, you don't change locally physics on these brains unless you have some profiles in the bulk. That is perfectly possible. What you are saying, okay. No, you don't have necessarily profiles. No, you don't have necessarily profiles of those fields. Like, for example, I can have dilaton profile in the bulk. Dilaton can have profile in the bulk. In which case, you are absolutely right. The couplings will change from position to position. Couplings will be position dependent. Now, these are very tricky, these are very special cases when you have really strong profiles in the bulk. Because normally brains shine the dilaton, but usually if you go far away from the brain, this dilaton profile drops like inverse power of R, unless you have two extra dimensions, in which case you have logarithmic profile of the dilaton. Okay? So, if you have more than two extra dimensions, these profiles drop very rapidly. And so, normally you have constant value of the dilaton in the bulk. So here, all the time, I was making assumption that you don't have profiles in the bulk which change locally physics from point to point, okay? Okay, let me just, there is somebody. Okay, let me, okay, your question is, okay, this is bulk, okay? Yeah, if you have some background field configuration, then clearly if I place brain here and brain here will be different physics, right? If I
the background field configuration,
what you make it clear,
you're talking about solving some
Bolzmann equation. Right, but you should
have
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It's not a flat space. It's not
homogeneous. No, sure. I'm saying. No, sure, I'm saying the following thing. No, that's not completely the case. Let me answer. No, that's not the... Look, let me take, for example, now, your question is, sometimes I can have these profiles, sometimes I may have no profiles, okay? Now...
Okay, so the previous statement is based on...
Yeah, previous statement is that the physics is identical if you... Yeah, exactly. Local physics is position independent. Now, however, I want to make the point, because... It's not so easy to get profiles in the bulk of some dilatonic field or something like that. You are getting profiles which are strongly affecting physics along the bulk in the special cases. Like if you have codimension 2, then you have dilatonic profiles which go like log of R. Well, let me give you an example. Take torus. Why? It's important. Let's figure it out. No, why? No. Let me take torus. Yeah. Of course.
It Of course, that's true. Sure. But I'm saying in the flat, in the case of flat space, take the flat torus, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Let me make the following.
I think you should come, let me make the
point. No. Let me make the point, okay? Now, the short answer is that bulk is never a flat space. As soon as you put brain in the bulk, there is no way to get flat space in the bulk. There is always some distortion of the metric, okay? The question is how that distortion goes. Whether it's a reasonable assumption that I can ignore that distortion when I go away from the metric or away from the brain and approximate the bulk filled by the constant value. The answer is yes. I have plenty of cases in which you can do that, okay? That's the point. But you are absolutely right. That's an important point. Precisely, I want you to make it next. That if you have profiles in the bulk, you can have changing physics. That's the... Well, because in n equals 2, okay, codimension is 2, the brain is never a small perturbation to the bulk because Green's functions are logarithmic. No, even one brain, I'm saying. You see, if you have... Yeah, if it's more than n equals 2, for example, imagine that you have one millimeter bulk and I have 100 brains in it. Then, as soon as I go away from the brain, the expectation value of the dilaton is nearly constant because it drops like inverse power of n minus 2 plus some constant, okay? This is what I wanted to say. So for n bigger than 2, the brains in the flat space are small perturbation for the flat space. If you are working at the distances, because this will be distance 1 micron between the brains. Okay, anyway, I'm making that assumption. I think it's a reasonable assumption. Here is the bottom line. This is how this field will behave. But now I absolutely agree that you can have a situation when it is translation and non-invariant. Yes. Okay, let me discuss stability briefly. To sterile neutrinos on the other brains, right. Sorry, which experiment? Yes, right. Okay, so the question is now the stability. Whether these configurations, you can really make them stable under some circumstances. And from the first glance, it looks quite difficult. The reason why this is the case, because actually, whenever you take the brain and fold it, the other side of the brain becomes like anti-brain, okay? And for example, whatever was charged that was preventing this brain from collapse, say in the case of deep brains, it's Ramon charge, or whatever it is, becomes zero. On this folded situation, if you have brain which goes up and down, the total charge of the brain is zero. So therefore, a priori, you don't have any reason for this configuration to be stable. Because you can measure charge by evaluating the standard integral, and because brain is now folded, you can slide it away and shrink it to the point, okay? So the charge is zero. So the point is then, for example, for the deep brains, you can immediately see this, because remember, for the deep brains, I have three exchanges if they are large distance from each other. I have exchange by dilaton, graviton, which is attractive, and then Ramon, which is repulsive. But for the anti-brain, now it will be, all of them will be attractive. So the anti-brain, they want to collapse and disappear. No. So the question is whether you can stabilize brain anti-brain or it is a universal rule that they always should be unstable. The answer is that you at least in the toy examples, you can do that, okay? If there are other bulk fields which do not distinguish brain from anti-brain and which are repulsive in nature, okay? And here is a very simple example of this sort. Okay, consider for the following situation. Consider theory which has two types of real scalar fields, okay? One is phi and another is theta. You can think of theta as being a phase of some scalar field, which has a condensate. So this theory, and I write down the potential like this. Actually, you can write down more complicated terms. My answer will not depend on that, okay? I just for simplicity draw these three essential terms. This theory has a degeneracy, okay? The energy of this theory, vacuum energy, has degeneracy. Under this transformation, so phi goes to minus phi, and theta is shifted by any multiple of 2 pi, okay? And because of that, simply from the topological arguments, you know that you have two types of solitons in this theory, two types of brains, okay, if this is five-dimensional theory. So there are brains which are behaving like Sine-Gordon solitons, which go from 0 to 2 pi, and there is a brain which behaves like kink, which goes from minus phi to plus phi, okay? Now, the point is this. if the coefficient in front of this interaction term is negative, what happens is that brain and soliton, they want to create a bound state, okay? Which is independent whether you have brain soliton or anti-brain soliton. Because the point is that through soliton and through the brain, cosine and phi both go through zero. And if the term interaction term is negative, potential prefers to have one zero instead of having two zeros. So it wants to put zeros on top of each other, okay? Then let's compactify the fifth dimension and see what is the configuration. Configuration will be like this. There will be kink, so brain, then anti-brain, then there will be soliton and again soliton. You can put arbitrary number of solitons because 2π boundary conditions, 2π's are compatible with boundary conditions. Now solitons repel each other, okay? And kink, anti-kink, they want to annihilate, and clearly at the end the outcome depends on the balance between these two forces, okay? You can always choose parameters here that soliton-soliton repulsion stabilizes versus kink, anti-kink attraction. It's simply a matter of potential, okay? So although there is no so obvious charge which is conserved for the kink and anti-kink system, still this system is stable for some choice of parameters, okay? Another sort of more topological reason of stability is this. Consider the scalar field which lives on the brain. And imagine that the scalar field goes into the condensate and forms the domain wall because it has regions on the brain with minus expectation value and regions on the brain with plus expectation value. Okay? So there is a domain wall on the brain. Now bend this brain, fold this brain exactly at the domain wall. And ask yourself a question, what will be this interaction between these two folds? Well, if you only have gravity, it's enough that you have attraction. So these two folds, they want to attract each other because of gravity. But if you try to put them on top of each other, clearly there is a topological obstruction because the phi has different expectation values on the two sides, so which is incompatible with putting this on top of each other. Now, in terms of potential, this is translated that you have repulsive short-range potential because if you want to put phi minus and phi plus on top of each other, you can never do that. You have to make phi both plus or both minus or both zero. In any case, you are encountering this potential energy barrier, which is infinite, okay? Because to go from minus to plus, it has to go through zero, which is costly in potential energy, okay? So this is another toy example of brain stabilization, when brain and anti-brain are stabilized. But in this case, brain, the different folds, they have different boundary conditions. Yes? What? No, it should be a brain field. It may be a bulk field, but the important thing is that it should have expectation value on the brain, okay? That's important. Yes? Oh, no, of course. This is just... Because if imagine you achieve the situation in which case brain, different brains at large distances, they have repulsion. At short distances, they have attraction. Okay? Then it's normal. It will be like van der Waals forces. If you distribute these guys, it will be stabilized at some optimal distances from each other because they cannot come close because they are repulsive. They cannot go far because they are attractive. So I don't think you have to fine-tune anything. The problem is once you get this kind of picture, okay, then it sort of will be normal that they will be somehow distributed. Of course, it will be very difficult to solve, I don't know, this distribution, but it will be normal. Like molecules, van der Waals forces. Okay? Okay, let me discuss implication for supersymmetry breaking before in the remaining whatever minutes. And actually, there can be interesting implication for the supersymmetry breaking of this picture because the folded brain, if you consider in supersymmetric theory, take brain which is folded, it is never a BPS state. I mean, it is never a state which preserves any supersymmetry. The reason for that is that normally whenever the brain is a BPS state, whenever it preserves some supersymmetry, there is a conserved charge. It's maybe topological charge or something else, but usually you can define non-trivial boundary conditions for the brain so that this charge that stabilizes the brain is promoted into the central charge. Okay, which prevents system from collapsing because it preserves half of the supersymmetry. Now, clearly, if you take brain and bend it, because by precisely the reason that there is no any more conserved charge that you can define, at least in these simplest cases than I discussed, there is no central charge that you can define again. And therefore, all the supersymmetries must be broken. So in the other words, if you have folded brain, it's automatically non-BPS state. It breaks always all the supersymmetries. That may be very nice because, what can be in this brain picture the simplest explanation why you don't see supersymmetry? If we don't live if we live on the non-BPS brain, then we should not see supersymmetry, okay? If the brain that we live inside is non-BPS, we will not see Fermi-Bosé degeneracies in the world volume, okay? This was the idea that we discussed with Misha Schiffman some time ago. And here it may be a realization of this thing. If you have folded brain which is stable, you will not have supersymmetry in the world volume theory. I mean, it's also easy way, how can you see that there is no supersymmetry? Because take one brain, okay, which is BPS state. Now, if brain is BPS state, say in the simplest case, I have a zero fermion mode which lives on the brain, and then there is a zero scalar field which corresponds to the translation, broken translation invariance by the brain, which is Goldstone mode, okay? Now, if you take this brain and bend it and stabilize it, what will remain one massless scalar in both world volume theories because there is only one center of mass motion, which is now free. But there will be still two fermions because this fermion on this side is massless, so will be the fermion on this side because it's the same fermion just propagating upside down, okay? So this is just a simple, trivial way to see on this toy model why you get theory with no supersymmetry in the world volume, okay? But of course, at the end, you have to construct something realistic that account for the observable masses of the quarks and leptons and gauginos and superpartners. And do I have 5 minutes or? Okay, oh, sorry. No, I thought he was a chairman. Sir? Yes. Yes. So two brains that are parallel may or may not be supersymmetric. That depends on the brains. But brain which is folded usually is. So you say if you remove to the infinity one, the remaining one. Then it will be non-BPS, right? What I'm saying is very simple. I'm saying whenever you have folded brain, no matter if it's stable or not, it breaks all the supersymmetries.
Well, if you start to do that just parallel to the brain, but you stabilize that so that there is no modulus corresponding to.
Yeah, you avoid the BPS, exactly. Exactly. No, not in this. No, consider this case, right? It's simplest. Simplest is this, right? Fermion is this. It's clearly, if fermion on this side is massless, on this side it has to be also massless because it's the same fermion. Then both are massive. But you still have one massless scalar which corresponds to the central mass motion. Okay, so it's. No. I'm saying about supersymmetry. No. The question was about brain anti-brain, not about brains. Brains you can stabilize perfectly with compatible with supersymmetry. There is no problem. They are anti-brain, exactly. Okay. Let me in remaining 2 minutes after discuss the horizon problem. Okay, this let me recall what is the horizon problem in the standard cosmology. I mean, horizon problem is one of the things that we like. Why we like inflation, and these two transparencies that I will discuss now, they sort of go in sort of perpendicularly to what I was discussing before. So forget all these astrophysical implications and stuff. And suppose you want to solve horizon problem without invoking inflation. Okay. Now, what is the horizon problem? Horizon problem is that today the microwave background radiation that we see is very homogeneous. Okay? Now, this microwave background radiation that we see was emitted long time ago. But at the time where it was emitted, the universe was much smaller. But not only that the universe was smaller. So the universe, I mean the size of the universe that we see today. So this is co-moving volume of our universe. So take this volume and scale it back. What happens is that when you scale it back, today it contains one causally connected region. But back in the past, it was containing many causally disconnected regions. And the question is, how come these regions knew about each other? How they knew about each other's temperature, okay? Well, here we have a situation when you may think that you may solve horizon problem because of precisely of this crumpling into the extra dimension. Because now brain can communicate through extra dimension. Clearly, as we said, no, gravitational distance is different. If you send signal by the gravitational distance, by bulk gravity, you can bring two points into the causal contact without exchanging light signals, okay? Light may take much longer to go from one place to the other, okay? So therefore, this is the idea. So imagine you had this volume, which was the Hubble volume, so the causally connected volume back in the past. And you take now the brain, which is co-moving volume of our horizon, and crumple it into this small box, okay? When this brain straightens out, which is the question how it straightens out, you will get causally connected regions, although they were separated much bigger than the distance that light has to travel, okay? In other words, what I'm saying is this, okay? Take this piece of paper. Imagine that this is now our horizon that we see, okay? And now imagine that, okay, this was the Hubble volume back in the past, so I can just crumple this, right, in this Hubble volume. And then because of gravity, it becomes thermalized. Now if I unfold it again, now these parts know about each other, so they will be thermalized. Now, unfortunately, you have to understand how the brain unfolds itself, okay? It's not so trivial, because if you take brain at the zero temperature, it will not unfold itself. It will just collapse and shrink and disappear, right? So essentially, the high temperature is very important. Not only high temperature is very important, that you have some chemical potential on the brain, which prevents this brain from collapsing and effectively make it sort of tensionless. Then you can ask question. I take this very naive picture of the brain, and I start this unfolding by the expansion of the universe. And when I finish this unfolding, I'll get brain which now cannot unfold anymore. Now it has to get stretched. Once it starts being stretched, we get Norman Robertson Walker, Friedman Robertson Walker expansion, okay? With certain temperature T star. Now, this temperature T star is the temperature after which universe expands as normal. So the question is, what is this temperature? Clearly, if you want to do nucleosynthesis, this temperature should be about 1 MeV, okay, at least. Then we can reproduce successful predictions of nucleosynthesis. So what is interesting is that in this situation, we can consider two different mechanisms, which I don't have time to discuss, how this brain unfolds, and in the simplest approach. And the temperature T star which you get, you solve horizon problem, that is true. But the temperature T star that you get is 3 kelvins, precisely temperature today, okay? So I don't know whether this is really a coincidence that every time you unfold the brain, the resulting temperature is 3 kelvins, or... The point is this, okay? The point is this. If you want this brain to have possibility to unfold, you have to somehow suspend this minimal area rule that normally governs the motion of the brain, because normally we have the minus metric on the brain and the word volume and the tension. So if you only have this, no, there will not be any unfolding. It will just collapse and disappear. So you want to suspend this rule. The only way at the moment we know that to suspend this rule is to postulate that there are particles at some high temperature on the brain. And you have chemical potential which resists to the shrinking. Okay? Because what is going on is that in that case, the piece of brain which has, say, radius R will look like this. R times the tension plus temperature to the fourth times R cubed. But then you have to minimize this with respect to the constant entropy. Okay? And you will get that you start from random initial conditions and brain will start shrinking until the temperature gets equal to the tension. And then it will behave like tensionless, okay? After that point, until it completely straightens out, temperature is not changing, okay? Therefore, that will be the temperature of the normal Friedman-Robertson local universe after you finish this unfolding. That always comes out to be 3 keV because it takes either it takes precisely one Hubble time to unfold this brain, or the problem is following that. If you want to crumple brain in the small volume, you see, naively we were thinking, okay, it will be very easy because you take volume, and because it is codimensionless, right, the brain has less codimension than the volume, you can fit arbitrarily high surface. The problem is that you want this volume not to be just volume. You want it to be a Hubble volume. Now, Hubble volume depends on the energy density inside this volume. Now, crumpling the brain, which carries entropy, increases entropy inside the volume, so it makes Hubble volume smaller. And therefore, there is this race which you can only satisfy at 3 keV temperatures, okay? 3 Kelvin temperatures. Sorry. And that's the reason. Very dramatic. and that's precisely the reason why this happened. Now, we don't know whether changing this, I don't know, theory or whatever, or considering some other brain which under some conditions can behave like tensionless, then there is nothing wrong with this idea, okay? But as I said, in the simplest realizations, it comes out a complete disaster because this means today we just finished unfolding, okay? So it is compatible with today's observations. The problem is nucleosynthesis. Okay, I think that's it. Yeah. Sorry?
A lot of the mechanisms you are describing for us depend on having one co-dimension. And if you have
no.
Three co-dimensions, you can think of the pullback rule itself because of the one of the rest.
You mean the stabilization mechanism or what? No, I mean, normally it will be like spaghetti, no? It's like you are taking this spaghetti and stretching by primordial inflation. So they will become parallel to the surface. No, what I'm saying is that take one brain to start with, okay? Of course, you can have some other brains. We don't know that. Take one brain, which. But I mean, no. But what I'm saying is that, no, I precisely was considering codimensions higher than one. It's like, so the brain is point-like in the. It's like spaghetti into, take codimension to tube, right? Take tube which has two dimensions and put there spaghetti. If you stretch the spaghetti, the only way to stretch them is that they be. But it will be, it always will be point-like. Oh, what do you call Hausdorff dimension? Because I. If you just allowed it. Oh, then of course. Sure, of course. Absolutely. You mean. So the question is about last part or the first part? I don't. No, because they're different. Yeah. Oh, no. I can give you very nice. Very. Absolutely. Absolutely. In any dimension. Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, absolutely. That's very easy to answer. Okay, let me answer them. Now, let me translate what means brain not aligned properly in the language of effective field theory in four dimensions, okay? Now, I have this extra dimension, and I have brain like this, and then you are worried that I may have brain like that, right? And then third brain like this. Yeah. Yes, okay, one brain can go like this, another brain can go like that, third brain can go like this, sure. Now, let me integrate over the compact dimension, okay, and write down the effective field theory as viewed from the four dimensions at the distance is bigger than the size of extra dimension. In that effective field theory, how do I describe this crazy orientation of the brain? The way I describe it is that on each brain, there is a scalar field which corresponds to the Goldstone mode broken translation invariant. The fact that these fields are not aligned means that in the effective field theory, I should have non-zero expectation value of the Goldstone. In the other words, translation invariance in the effective four-dimensional theory, four-dimensional translation invariance, should be broken, okay? You should have non-zero gradients of some of the Goldstones. Now, you know that whatever gradient you have, like that, of massless fields, it's completely redshifted by inflation. This means that whatever inflationary period you have, it should align these brains, exactly. Because any gradient, All the time, these are reduced to the gradients in effective field theory. I think I have answered. Look, if it's different, there is no way to accommodate it other than breaking translation invariance in four dimensions. Look, I mean, if I have a situation like that. Yeah. Yeah, so you have one. If I have a situation when one brain is like that, another brain is like that, in effective field theory, translation invariance will be broken. Clearly, no, there is an angle which I can measure. I go away from the brains, I can measure this angle. Of course. Look, this angle breaks translation invariance. I can measure it. Any this kind of. I think it answers it. How do I know that brain will be close? Sorry, maybe then I misunderstood your question. How do I know that brain will be closer to what? I don't understand. Closer to what? Closer to what? I don't understand. I mean, maybe I'm missing something. I don't understand what you're asking. Your question I understood perfectly, but I don't think this is related. Because you are asking these brains cannot go farther than millimeter in any cross-section, right? Because this is the size of extra dimension. That I know. This is bounded. I mean, the distance between them is bounded. Right? This was your question? Okay, so then that's the answer. No, sorry, I misunderstood because I thought this question was related with David's question because about alignment. No. As I said, we are assuming that last part of inflation is happening on the brain because of the reasons completely independent from this proposal. Because you know this about this cosmological. You have paper, right?
Yeah. Just invoke the small size of the compact dimension. If you have inflation in the bulk, you would blow them.
Precisely, but that's that's the translation to the cosmological moduli problem. This would mean that I would give huge expectation value to the radion modulus, which would then come back and start oscillations, and you don't want that. So this is precisely the point. The last stage of inflation that I was considering is like a no. Once it stretches his brain, it's primordial inflation, which happens everywhere.
Why doesn't it expand the radius of the bulk?
Okay, I can quote one scenario in which I have not participated. There was a scenario by Nima, Sawas, Nimania, and I think John. They consider one particular example of that inflation. Now, your question is absolutely legitimate, but that is question for any model with these large extra dimensions. How do you get inflation which will not completely destroy the normal picture of the world? That, of course, is question, but it's...
But you're relying on that perspective.
Of course, I'm relying because this is the ingredient of the normal cosmology. So that part I'm not solving in this... That I'm assuming that there was a period of inflation which solved horizon and flatness problems, independently of this proposal. If you need this kind of inflation, would necessarily stretch also the brains. I'm not answering how that primordial inflation happened. People had different proposals, and there was one of the proposals that the inflaton can be the radius modulus itself. So the extra dimensions may be small, and then they expand. But I don't want to quote any particular mechanism because that is very generic. If you don't accommodate any inflation like that, then this framework has problems anyway with the cosmology. So that was just, I was assuming that I was relying on that. Okay. Yes, no, it's okay. The point is this, okay? Okay, here are the brains, right? Sorry? The question was, how do I end up with one brain being hotter than the others? Okay? And the answer it was in that transparency. When I said, okay. Yeah. Okay, imagine you have five brains. Now, I have five... okay, I have five scalar fields on this brain. But actually, it's the same scalar field. Okay? So potential... Yeah. So potential is identical. I mean, relaxing condition... initial condition is different, exactly. Now, the question is, You start from the different initial conditions. You want to measure time, which will take all these guys to relax to the minimum. Yeah. No, there is no such term. Inflation happens everywhere. The field that drives inflation may live either in the brain or bulk, but inflation is everywhere because gravity is everywhere. Whatever causes your cosmological energy density will make to inflate everybody. It's like in financing, right? You inflate everybody, then you reheat only yourself. So it's like, but okay, so let me go to back to your question. Okay. Now there are these five inflatons. They sit on the different places. Now you measure time, which takes this, all these guys to relax into the minimum. The point is that the guy which will be important for the reheating most likely will be the guy who relaxed latest. Because until the latest guy relaxed, inflation was going on. That's it. So this means this guy redshifted everybody, then he relaxed in the minimum, and then reheated predominantly his brain. Because it's more stronger, it is coupled to the fields on his brain.
But basically, until this guy relaxes,
yeah.
Point,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's dynamically. What is happening is the one guy is falling down, reheating, but this other guy is redshifting everybody constantly.
So my yeah. Question was actually, so the way the other folks get filled up, because now they're empty.
Exactly. Right.
The way they get filled up is by getting radiation from this hot brain, right?
By not getting not radiation. So what happens is that now this field, this one, decays to its own brain. But now, because it is coupled gravitationally to everybody, exactly.
And this ratio of
yes. Oh yeah, that's something. Is something. Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So yeah. We don't know what it is. It's a parameter of the theory. I mean, if you just want the dark matter, you are more. Exactly. Now, of course, this number of 30 you only want if you really want the macho stars to be responsible, these guys to be responsible for the macho stars. If you just want them to the dark matter, then you're...
But for some other, you want this ratio of entities that you want to receive its size from the coupling of...
Yeah, absolutely, right. I mean, so the fact that the individually other densities will be smaller than the density on our wall is quite reasonable. Because this guy has suppressed couplings to the other guys. But then, of course, the actual coupling, we don't know. We have to postulate something, clear. Yes?
The gravitational coupling seems to me is going to be suppressed by powers of the Planck scale divided by...
Yeah, exactly. Right. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So...
You have one of these scenarios where you have a big volume.
Yeah.
Those couplings are going to be really weak.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, of course. Yeah, I mean, the coupling goes like this, right? So, coupling goes like this. It's an effective field theory. If you look at the coupling, maybe I can. So, in the effective field theory, it goes like this. You will have some power of this inflaton. May I?
Yeah. Secondly,
what's wrong with this kind of coupling? Sure. I completely agree with Sawas. You can you have a bunch of possibilities. You can have possibility when so extra dimension was small, got reheated, therefore these brains were closer, they get reheated stronger. But the simplest I'm just viewing from the point of the effective field theory. I don't see anything wrong with this kind of coupling. You will, normally, this phi will decay into the other stuff by some operators which are suppressed by a Planck, right?
But on my own brain, it's going to couple.
Yeah. Right, but then let's see what is the actual coupling, right? It is effective expectation value of the phi versus the Planck scale, and then phi psi psi, and this may be quite big, right? It's like a wave of inflaton, right? This is like, this guy oscillates. You have to average over this effective coupling to see how it decays into the other stuff. I don't think it's tremendously will be, it's difficult to make it to be reasonable. No. It's expectation value, which can be huge. It must should be smaller. Expectation value is normally is of order n Planck, precisely. Precisely, expectation value of this phi, when it inflates, is of order four-dimensional Planck scale. But its potential is flat, so the mass is very small. In expectation value, you are not integrating waves, you are integrating masses, massive states. So, okay, fine. Yeah, okay. Okay, I agree this is the issue because you need to postulate something about this thing. Of course, to enormous, absolutely, enormous, absolutely. But I think that it's not difficult to make this coupling to be reasonable. We can discuss this afterwards. Okay. Thank you. The transference, right? Yes, right. Yes.
Yes, of course. Isn't the brain like the instanton and you have like an instanton and the brain? In order to get the force to change like a minimum, you have the force to have the same. You have different 1 over R, like 1 over R to some power. You have at some point like repelling and attracting the effect in the brain. And we said that this gets stabilized. But in order to have a stabilization, you have to have the forces to go in and to have different behaviors.
Oh, yeah. One force has exponential behavior, another one has inverse power.
Which one has exponential?
This repulsion between the expectation values of pi plus and pi minus. It is very short range, it is that position.
Oh, I see. That can be computed from field theory.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. This computer changed by this so it's exponent versus the power. You are absolutely right.
By the way, I'm your sister.
Oh, hi.
Where are you from?
From New York, as well.
Oh, but originally?
Originally from Georgia.
Oh, I see. You have a very. Your accent sounds like Romanian accent.
Oh, really?
That's the person that made me call Sergio.
No.
This stuff is very interesting. Like, did anybody do any like for the dark matter?
The calculation, actual calculation?
To find the profile of the galaxy rotation curve?
Oh no, nobody. We just wrote this code.
Because cold dark matter has cold dark matter is kind of dead from the point of view of technology. I mean,
yeah, it's sort of what they say, right. Only cold dark matter.
Only cold dark matter.
But you can have it.
One more question, why can't they have parallel brains and they can have different physics, different standard modeling? Something is just different matter.
Of course, if you have parallel brains which are different, then the problem is that you lose predictive power. They can be arbitrary. In this case, we know exactly what is the dark matter. Because you exactly know what is the dark matter made of.
But I mean, for example, you could take the other brains that you have, I mean, maybe like all the possible vacuum coming from a given gut or something, or all the possible breaking.
Yeah, sure, that you can do it, absolutely. I mean, this is what normally people were doing when they're postulating mirror matter, because it cannot be identical to us, because of the reasons that I listed. So therefore, you have to somehow raise the symmetry between these.
What's happening with the ends of the brains? Are they coming back to our justice?
Oh yes, once they are away from the horizon, it does not make sense to ask whether they are coming back to us. Okay, because they are far away. But yes, depends how far they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you have to do a lot of optimization. I mean, it's not
because the point is that because of the Hubble redshift, if they are far, then they are moving faster than they are coming back. So there are two effects which compete, right? Gravitation wants to pull them away.
Right. What do you mean by gravitation?
Because they contribute to the energy density of the universe, right? So gravitationally, the universe is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was only gravity and brain had no this minimal area rule.
But it's a cosmological constant only which pulls them apart. It's not matter. I mean, the matter is the same. I mean, the universe right now doesn't inflate so much. I mean, everything which is out there.
No, it's not inflation, but it's power law.
Right?
So it's a power law, but if the two objects are very much separated, then even power law expansion is important.
Mm-hmm.
Compute relative.
But
relative.
The brain tension coming back should be.
I'm not sure if it is more, because the point is that if there is a fault like this, you cannot make cosmological constants here and here equal. This means here vacuum energy density is less than here.
So you inflate here more.
You don't inflate, but you will have some kind of anti-deficit picture on the other side. I don't know what's dynamic in that case. We cannot figure that out. But that's a good question.
Thank you. No, 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 check call. But if it's not like this, if you're a victim, you will not bring that in.
I just like his story.
Thank you. bar is open a little early.
I need a drink. I don't know about you.
That's not the way to do it. The way to do it is not to solve the equation, because it's the end of that.
So you have to show something starts to
infer it. Right. You have to show that the focus on the paper is so you have to just manipulate the RPA.
Right. But I think the scientific stuff isn't the right way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, we shouldn't be happy. We shouldn't be happy.